All right, knowledge seekers, ready for another deep dive?
Absolutely. Always ready to explore.
Today, we're tackling those tiny but mighty molecules, the ones that make life happen, the ones that power every cell in your body. Proteins.
Yeah, they're pretty essential, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely essential. And we've got some serious science to decode today, straight from a university biochemistry course. Don't worry, we'll break it all down for you. But first, let's set the stage. We're talking about molecules that are way too small to see, right?
Definitely invisible to the naked eye.
So how do scientists even begin to study these things? How do they figure out, say, how much protein is in a sample, or even identify specific proteins within a complex mix? It's like finding a needle in a haystack.
Well, that's where the ingenuity of science comes in. Researchers have developed a whole arsenal of clever techniques for analyzing and manipulating these tiny but mighty molecules.
And that's what we're diving into today. And luckily, we've got our expert guide here to help us navigate this microscopic world, ready to connect the dots.
Absolutely. I'm all about the what and the why behind these fascinating techniques.
Perfect. So let's start with a method that uses something we're all familiar with, something we can actually see: light. You might remember from our DNA deep dive that scientists use UV light to analyze DNA. Well, it turns out proteins have their own unique way of interacting with light.
That's right. Proteins can absorb UV light, and we can use this property to measure their concentration. The magic happens at a wavelength of 280 nanometers.
So we shine a UV light on a protein solution, and based on how much light gets absorbed, we can tell how much protein is there.
Exactly. Think of it like shining a flashlight through a glass of water. If the water is clear, most of the light passes through. But if you add something that absorbs light, like, say, food coloring, less light will make it to the other side.
Oh, I get it. It's like the protein is acting as the food coloring, blocking some of that UV light. The more protein, the darker the solution, and the less light gets through.
You got it.
Cool. But I'm guessing it's not quite that simple, right?
You're right, it's a bit more nuanced. Not all proteins absorb UV light equally. Their ability to soak up those UV rays depends on specific amino acids within their structure, specifically aromatic amino acids like tryptophan and tyrosine.
So these special amino acids act like tiny antennas within the protein, tuned to capture UV light. The more antennas a protein has, the stronger its signal, so to speak.
Exactly. It's a clever way to use light to measure protein concentration. But, and there's always a but in science, right? This UV absorbance method works best when you have a pure protein sample.
Makes sense. Like if you're trying to measure the sugar in lemonade, but you've also added strawberries and lemons, it's hard to tell how much of the sweetness comes from just the sugar.
Exactly. When you have a mixture of different proteins or other molecules that also absorb UV light, things can get, well, messy.
Okay, so what do scientists do when they're dealing with a more complex protein mixture? How do they sort things out?
That's where things get a bit more, shall we say, colorful. Scientists turn to colorimetric assays. These techniques literally change the color of a solution based on the amount of protein present.
Oh, this sounds fun. Adding some vibrancy to our protein investigation.
Right, so one common assay is the Bradford assay. It uses a dye called Kumassi Brilliant Blue G250, which starts out reddish brown.
Okay, so we've got our reddish brown dye. What happens next?
When this dye interacts with the protein, it changes color. It turns blue.
It's like a molecular makeover. The Kumassi dye goes from reddish brown to blue when it encounters a protein. And the more protein present, the more intense the blue becomes.
Precisely. The intensity of the blue color directly tells us how much protein is in the sample.
Pretty neat. So it's like a color-coded protein meter. More blue, more protein.
Exactly.
I love it. But I'm guessing there are other ways to get colorful with proteins, right?
Oh, good at. Another popular method is the BCA assay, which stands for bisynchronic acid assay.
BCA assay, got it. What's the color story with this one?
This one's a bit more complex, involving a two-step reaction. But the end result is a vibrant purple color. And just like the Bradford assay, the intensity of the purple tells us how much protein is present.
So I've got blue with Bradford, purple with DCA. It's like a protein rainbow, but hold on, with both of these assays, we're still just getting a total protein count, right?
Right.
What if we want to see individual proteins to see how big they are, how pure our sample is? We need more than just a color change.
Absolutely. And that's where we move on to a technique called SDS PAGE, which stands for sodium dodecyl sulfate polyacrylamide gel electrophoresis.
Okay, that's a mouthful. But I'm guessing this technique lets us actually see those proteins.
You got it.
How does it work?
Well, imagine a molecular obstacle course where proteins of different sizes have to navigate through a gel matrix.
A molecular obstacle course. I like it. So the smaller, nimbler proteins zip through the gel quickly, while the larger ones lag behind.
Exactly. And we can visualize these separated proteins as distinct bands on the gel using a stain, usually kumassi blue.
So we've got our protein bands, each representing a different protein separated by size. It's like a protein lineup.
It is. And the position of each band on the gel tells us the size of the protein.
So it's like a molecular ruler. We can see how big each protein is. And I bet we can also get a sense of how pure our sample is, right?
Absolutely. A single sharp band suggests a pure protein sample. But if we see multiple bands, it means we have a mixture of proteins.
Okay, SDS PAGE. It's like taking a group photo of our protein sample with everyone lined up according to height. Super cool. Mm. But what if we want to find a specific protein within that lineup? What if we're looking for, say, the protein responsible for a particular disease?
That's where the power of antibodies comes into play. A technique called Western blotting allows us to target and visualize a specific protein, even in a complex mixture.
Antibodies, those are like the immune system's guided missiles, right?
Yeah, you could say that.
So how do they work in this context? How do we use them to find our protein of interest?
Well, it starts with transferring our separated proteins from that SDS PAGE gel onto a membrane. Then we use antibodies that are specifically designed to recognize and bind to our target protein.
So these antibodies act like molecular bloodhounds sniffing out our protein of interest amongst a crowd of other proteins.
That's a great analogy.
But antibodies themselves are pretty tiny. How do we actually see where they've bound? How do we know we've found our target?
Well, for that, we use secondary antibodies. These antibodies bind to our primary antibody, and they have a special tag, like a fluorescent molecule, that allows us to visualize them.
So it's like attaching a flashing light to our molecular bloodhound. We can see exactly where it's gone and what it's found.
Exactly.
It's like a microscopic treasure hunt. We use antibodies to track down our protein of interest and then light it up so we can see it. Pretty ingenious, right?
It is. And speaking of ingenious techniques, there's another antibody-based method that's incredibly powerful and widely used, especially in diagnostics. It's called ELISA, which stands for Enzyme-Linked Immunosorbent Assay.
ELISA? I've heard of that. I think it's used in home pregnancy tests, right?
You're right. ELISAs are used in a wide range of applications, including pregnancy tests, disease diagnostics, and even environmental monitoring.
Wow. So it's a pretty versatile technique, but can we break it down a bit? How does ELISA actually work?
Sure. The most common type of ELISA is called a sandwich ELISA, and it involves, as the name suggests, creating a molecular sandwich with our target protein in the middle.
A molecular sandwich? Intriguing. How do we build this sandwich?
It starts with a capture antibody. This antibody is immobilized on a surface, like a plate, and acts like a molecular hook, grabbing onto our target protein.
Okay, we've got our hook ready and waiting. Then we add our sample to the plate, and any target protein present will bind to the capture antibody, getting snagged by that hook.
Exactly.
And then comes the other slice of bread for our sandwich.
Right. We add another antibody called the detection antibody, which also recognizes our target protein, but at a different site. This creates a sandwich with the target protein trapped between two antibodies.
Okay, so our protein is snugly sandwiched between two antibodies, but we still need a way to actually see this sandwich, right? How do we make it visible?
That's where enzymes come in. The detection antibody is linked to an enzyme that can trigger a color change or emit light when it reacts with a specific substrate.
So we add the substrate, and if our target protein is present, the enzyme kicks into gear, and boom, we get a signal. It's like a molecular beacon telling us, hey, we found your protein.
You got it. And the stronger the signal, the more target protein we have in the sample.
So it's all about quantifying that signal and relating it back to protein concentration. Just like with the other techniques we've discussed, it's a way to measure how much of a specific protein is present.
Exactly. ELISA is incredibly sensitive and specific, making it a powerful tool in research and diagnostics.
So we've covered a lot of ground already, from harnessing the power of light to employing these incredible antibody detectives. It's amazing how scientists have figured out ways to analyze and study these tiny but essential molecules.
It is. It really is amazing how far we've come in our ability to analyze and manipulate these tiny molecules.
It is. It's like we've zoomed in from a bird's eye view down to the molecular level. And each technique we've talked about gives us a different piece of the protein puzzle. We start with UV absorbance, just a quick check of the overall protein concentration, right?
Like a quick dip in the protein pool.
A quick dip to test the waters. Then we add some color with those colorimetric assays, Bradford, BCA. Those give us a more precise measurement, even if we have a mix of different proteins.
Yeah, those colorful reactions really make things easier to visualize.
They do. And then SDS page, that's where we actually get to see the proteins themselves all lined up according to their size. It's like a molecular beauty pageant.
Haha, I like that. A protein pageant.
But if we're looking for a specific protein in that lineup, we need something more targeted.
Exactly. And that's where those antibody detectives come in. With Western blotting, remember?
Oh, yeah, those molecular bloodhounds with their flashing beacons. So cool. Mm-hmm. And then ELISA, that's like the ultimate protein tracking system.
You got it.
It's incredible how scientists have developed all these tools to study something we can't even see.
It is pretty amazing. And it's all driven by the fact that proteins are not just static building blocks. They're these dynamic molecules constantly interacting, carrying out all sorts of essential tasks in our cells.
They're the little workers that keep our bodies running.
Exactly. And understanding how they work, how they interact, how they sometimes malfunction is crucial for so many fields, especially medicine.
Okay, so let's talk practical applications.
Yeah.
How are these protein analysis techniques being used in the real world? Give us some examples.
Well, in medicine, ELISAs are used all the time. They're used to diagnose diseases like HIV and hepatitis C by detecting specific viral proteins in blood samples.
So they can help identify these diseases even before people show symptoms.
Exactly. Early detection is key for so many conditions.
It is. And what about in research? I'm guessing these techniques are pretty essential in labs around the world.
Absolutely. Western blotting is like a workhorse in research labs. It's used to study everything from how proteins interact with each other to how their expression changes in response to different stimuli, like drugs or environmental factors.
So scientists are using these techniques to unravel the mysteries of how cells work, how they communicate, how they respond to their environment.
Right. It's like peeking behind the curtain of cellular processes. And the more we understand these processes, the better equipped we are to develop new treatments for diseases, to understand how our bodies work, to really grasp the complexity of life at the molecular level.
It's pretty mind-blowing. But it's not just about medicine and research, right? These techniques have applications in other areas too, don't they?
Oh, definitely. For example, they're used in food safety to detect harmful bacteria in food products, helping to prevent foodborne illnesses.
Wow. So these techniques, which operate at the microscopic level, really have a huge impact on our everyday lives.
They do. And as technology continues to advance, I think we can expect even more sensitive and efficient protein analysis techniques to emerge, giving us an even deeper understanding of these fascinating molecules.
It's exciting to think about the possibilities, but before we get too carried away with the future, I have a question that's been bugging me. We've been talking about detecting and quantifying proteins, but can we also manipulate proteins?
Manipulate?
Yeah. Can we engineer them, tweak them, change their properties, or even create entirely new proteins?
Ah, you're thinking like a true innovator. And the answer is yes, absolutely. There's a whole field dedicated to protein engineering where scientists use various techniques to modify proteins, to change their function, their stability, or even to create entirely new proteins with novel properties.
Wow. So we're not just observing the microscopic world anymore. We're actually shaping it.
We are. Protein engineering is a rapidly evolving field with the potential to impact so many different areas of our lives. We could design better enzymes for industrial processes, create new biomaterials for things like prosthetics and implants, or even develop protein-based drugs with enhanced effectiveness and fewer side effects. The possibilities are pretty much endless.
Endless possibilities. I like the sound of that. Protein engineering definitely deserves its own deep dive episode.
Agreed. But for now, we've covered a lot of ground in exploring the world of protein analysis. From those simple light-based measurements to those sophisticated antibody techniques, we've seen how scientists are using these tools to unravel the mysteries of these essential molecules.
It's been a fascinating journey. And it's amazing to think that these tiny proteins, which we can't even see, are at the heart of so many biological processes, from keeping our bodies functioning to shaping the world around us. It's amazing, right? These tiny proteins we can't even see are really the key players in so many things.
Absolutely. They're involved in pretty much every aspect of life as we know it.
And the more we learn about them, the more we realize how much potential they have.
Yeah, and how much we still don't know.
Exactly. So as we wrap up our deep dive into the world of proteins, I want to leave our listeners with something to ponder. What other incredible techniques might scientists develop in the future to unlock even more secrets about these fascinating molecules?
Ooh, that's a great question. It's fun to think about, you know, what the future holds for protein science. I mean, imagine tools that allow us to actually see protein movements within living cells in real time.
Whoa, that would be amazing. Like tiny GPS trackers for proteins. We could watch them interact, carry out their tasks, maybe even see how they malfunction in disease.
Exactly. Or imagine technologies that can rapidly screen thousands of proteins looking for potential drug targets. That would revolutionize drug development.
It's mind-boggling to think about the possibilities, and I bet as we learn more about proteins, we'll discover even more ways to harness their power for, well, for good.
Absolutely. Developing new therapies, engineering sustainable solutions, even creating new materials, proteins could hold the key to all sorts of innovations.
It's a pretty exciting time to be exploring this microscopic world, right? The world where these tiny molecules are really orchestrating the symphony of life.
It really is.
Well, that about wraps up our deep dive into the world of proteins. We've covered a lot of ground today, from harnessing light to those amazing antibody techniques. We've seen how scientists are working to unlock the secrets of these essential molecules. And to our listeners, remember, keep that curiosity alive. Never stop exploring and asking questions. You never know what amazing discoveries are waiting to be uncovered.